Today on Movie Rollers, we talk about men, irrational men, and ant men. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And yes, D as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Happy Friday.
Yay.
Friday evening, the best time.
The best time.
Of the weekend.
The best
time. Of the whole week.
I do love the feeling that you have on a Friday night. And yeah. After a hell of a week, I got home and I've already cracked open a beer.
Yes.
Rashmi's joining me.
Yes, I am.
Yes, he claims to be overhydrated, so...
I am. There is like liquid coming out of my pores.
So, what are we going to record today? We're going to talk about Ant-Man and Irrational Man.
Two very different men.
Yes.
Indeed, yes. Ant-Man is one of those movies that the title is so hard for me to pronounce because Ant-Man really? Doesn't sound right.
It's Ant-Man.
But yeah. It is Ant-Man. I agree. It's kind of
very difficult
clumsy
word
feeling.
For an Englishman to say. Ant-Man.
Ant-Man.
It doesn't flow.
Why not? Ant-Man.
Ant-Man.
Like Panty Man would be better.
It feels just as uncomfortable as that to say.
As Panty Man.
Really?
But if it was Pants Man.
Pants Man.
Or Pant Man.
Or well, Ants Man.
Okay.
The way Marvel's going, I think we're going to end up with Pantsman very soon. Because he is... Should we talk about Ant-Man?
Yeah.
Okay, because he is like a pretty obscure...
He's a minor character,
superhero,
yes.
Superhero, I guess. I mean, I had never heard of him until I started seeing the posters pop up all around various locations. And it's been hyped pretty well. I mean, I think they had one of the smartest movie posters ever.
Yes, it was a blank poster with a very little
a tiny
ant.
Little ant-sized man. And by the way, if you can hear howling in the background, we have...
an owl. We have a pet owl.
We have the Movie Rollers official owl. Yes, no. We have two cats running around. We have our younger cat, Ellie, who is now given full reign of the house, or full freedom of the house.
Yeah.
And our older cat, Callie, is having a little bit of a hard time adjusting.
Yeah.
So if you hear the occasional... yowl or hiss during the podcast, we do apologize.
It's not Yazdi.
It usually is.
Howling for a beer or hissing because he doesn't agree.
we'll call it a production error. Anyhow, so let's talk about Ant-Man. So it's the latest entry in the Marvel catalogue of film, and they really are like going into the depths of their catalog right now. They've done the Avengers, we've had Spider-Man. I mean, I think we're going to go back full loop very soon and start getting, you know, new Avengers reboots and so on and so
yeah.
forth. But it's a new character as far as the movie universe is concerned. I don't think we have we've had another Ant-Man mention even, so it's kind of a new addition. And I think those of us who aren't, you know, comic book encyclopedic knowledge are going to have a hard time kind of knowing who this guy is. But he's played by Paul Rudd, a very welcome presence on screen and kind of a different take on some of the Marvel stuff. So, guys, what did you think of Ant-Man?
So, I hate ants. I mean, I loathe ants, if anyone knows me. And living in San Diego, it's like we live on an ant hill. So I wasn't, as we were talking a little bit before the podcast started, it's a weird title. Ant-Man does nothing for me. But I have to say, this is one of the most joyful Marvel movies I've seen since Guardians of the Galaxy. And I absolutely loved it. And I'm surprised by how much.
Yes, the...
Yeah, this movie has no reason to be a tenth as good as it is. I had no desire to watch this movie. It looked supremely silly. Try explaining to somebody that this is a superhero which becomes the size of an ant and commands all these ants to work with him. It's preposterous beyond reason. And yet somehow the movie works. And I think it's because you come from a place of low expectations. I don't know what it is, but I've spoken about this ad nauseum. My big issue with comic book adaptations is they've stopped being comic. They're so heavy, and you know, it all started with the Nolan universe, and there's nothing wrong with that, but that's all that superheroes movies have been. And so
can't
this is
resist the dig.
I cannot resist the dig. But it's the opposite of, it's the complete opposite of even what the second Avengers movie was. It's there's nothing heavy about the movie. Everything about the movie is very light and on its feet, and it's immeasurably improved by the presence of Paul Rudd, and we can talk about that some more. But in the pantheon of the hundreds of Marvel movies that are there, I would put this towards the top, right behind Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Joe. I think he's not going to agree with us as much, Yazdi.
Just because we are.
Just because we're joyful.
Yes.
No, actually, I'm in total alignment with you guys here. It might be the expectation game. I mean, mm-hmm. I do think that has a part to play because, like you guys, I just didn't know. And I deliberately avoided watching trailers too because I felt like this movie was going to be based around a specific gimmick and I didn't want to know too much about that gimmick. But this is brilliantly done. I mean, it's done with a huge sense of fun. I think the movie is winking at you all the way through. Mm-hmm. I think they know that this is not necessarily a big, important franchise in the same way. And I think they come at it with a sense of lightheartedness that I think has been missing from, I mean, maybe Guardians had it too. You know, they, you know, when you know it's a smaller franchise, you're not having to cater to a whole bunch of hardcore fans who will be like, you know, you did it all wrong because the Superman's hero, you know, the Superman suit was like the wrong color and seen through. You know, you don't want that kind of nonsense, right. You know, hardcore. So I think they're allowed to be a bit more playful with the characters than perhaps, and I don't know the source material at all. I've never even heard of it, but really well done. Great action sequences. One of my favorite aspects of the movie was the whole Ant Vision type moment where where he shrinks down and you kind of see the world from a different perspective. I really felt the shrinking moments here. It worked brilliantly well. And I think that kind of direction here was, you know, kind of lifted the movie up as well as not just being, you know, a fun movie, but it was great fun. So sorry, I've rambled on a bit there, but yeah, I had a blast.
Yeah, I have to agree. So I think two things that you said. One, Yazdi, I agree with you. Paul Rudd is such an unexpected superhero, but he brings so much natural humor and heart to this role. And then, Joe, you're right. It's flawless direction in terms of some of those action sequences. There's this great segment where when as Ant-Man, he's shrinking and expanding and shrinking and expanding. And I kept thinking, if this was Michael Bay, Yazdi, to the point you always make, we wouldn't know what's going on. But this is done so flawlessly that it's so joyful to watch. It's amazing and mind-blowing and admirable. And I just think Paul Rudd is amazing in this movie. I really, really enjoyed his performance.
Yeah, he's such an unlikely person to pick to play a superhero. And even his humor is very particular. It's very specific. I mean, he's never been like a ha ha laugh out loud kind of guy. There's something very understated about his humor, and somehow that seems the right fit for this movie.
Yeah.
And maybe it's what you said, Joe, which is that the movie is very self-aware, that it's aware that everything about it is very silly. And so it's kind of in on the joke. And then the other bit is that I think is that it all comes down to the tone, right?
Mm.
Mm-hmm. When you're seeing something really preposterous on the scene, on the screen, if you have the tone right, people will smile at it and not roll their eyes.
Yeah.
And every scene in this movie, in a way, you could roll your eyes at how ridiculous it is. How much it's completely removed from any basis of reality. But I think it's the tone with which it's done that you kind of smile through it. And I think that that right there is a big success.
Yeah, and Yazdi, just before, Joe, you respond as well. You know, it's hard to do something light, but give it credit for being a good story and being done well. Because it's easy to mix up light with disposable.
Yes.
I don't think this is disposable. This isn't something that you don't admire. It's actually admirable in the way that it presents itself. And that's what really shocked me. I really enjoyed it. In fact, I kept thinking, I don't want this to end. And I haven't had that experience in a movie for a long, long time.
Well, the personality of the kind of the Ant-Man outside the suit, the Paul Rudd character, and I forget his name in the movie, but
Scott.
Something like that. He's not a heroic type, and I think he has this kind of sense of bewilderment almost about his situation constantly. And that comes across as a lot of fun in this movie, because he literally is like, oh my God, I've got this thing that like changes me to like, you know, small size. And there's just that lightheartedness around the whole mechanic of the movie that I think made it work. Again, no brooding heaviness, just a fantastic sense of fun with the mechanics of the shrinking and the growing. And one final point, I do ramble in this one. Michael Peña.
Yeah, he steals the movie.
Every scene.
Yeah.
Every scene. What?
And you didn't, I didn't know he had that in him. Because we've always seen him like do the really like, you know, he was with Jake Gyllenhaal in End of Watch.
Which
and,
you guys,
know,
yeah, I know which was one.
I don't think I've seen a goofy Michael Peña, and he does a very good goofy Michael Peña.
It's brilliant.
Yeah. And this is the other thing. I mean, initially I was thinking it was almost a bit Guy Ritchie-esque. Those scenes kind of played out with Michael Peña and Paul Rudd, which I really, really liked. And I think, Joe, just to add one final thing to what you were saying about Paul Rudd, the one thing that we haven't seen in superhero movies, even though they're usually like the nerd who changes into someone cool, you know, like Spider-Man or Superman, they're the nerd when they're not in the suit and then they become these cool superheroes. There was a vulnerability about Paul Rudd and the situation that he's in.
Mm-hmm.
So I really like that. And even the supporting characters, like Bobby Cannavale,
very good.
Really, really good. And then all of these, I think T.I. is in it too, right?
Yes, T.I. is in it.
T.I. and
Michael Douglas.
Michael Douglas is great. Evangeline Lilly. Really good movie.
And Corey Stoll.
Corey Stoll.
Sorry, Corey.
Who is a great actor?
Corey Stoll is very good.
I loved him in House of Cards, and he's
brilliant.
He's good in everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the other piece is that I was watching this movie, and about at the halfway point, it's created its own universe so well, and you're so happy with it that when it almost reminds you that this is part of the Avengers, it almost took me out of the movie. And it has a very funny little line. It has a very funny little line when you first realize that this story has anything to do with Avengers. It almost breaks the fourth wall when it does that.
Yes.
So I would have been perfectly happy if the Ant-Man story had nothing to do with the Avengers, but it's so well contained just within what it is. And I think it's all the more impressive because of two reasons. One is because, you know, high degree of difficulty. I don't want to make a movie about a guy who's an ant. It sounds like the stupidest thing. And the second thing is this movie has had a very troubled history. It was originally directed by the writer Joe Wright. And then there were differences, and then Joe Wright kind of came off the movie, and then
Peyton
Reed took over.
Wow.
And then Paul Rudd has part screenwriting credit. So I know this movie got handed from one person to the other, but it doesn't seem to show. It seems to be nice little, you know, the tone is maintained. And then the one final scene I will say before we all score is, you know how much I complain about, I'm tired of superhero movies with 20 minutes of nonstop action at the end, where cities are being decimated and it's just things blowing up. So smart of them to saying, enough of that, there's not going to be mass destruction. Even, maybe it's a spoiler, but the fate of the bad guy, it doesn't drag on for 20 minutes. It's clever, it's gimmicky, it works, and you're in and out. There's a cleanliness, it's clean. And I like how clean it is about its final act.
Yeah. No, I couldn't agree with more. I mean, that whole kind of expanding, shrinking mechanic is used to joyous effect in the finale.
So joyful.
Like, I mean, there's just the preposterousness of it, which basically involves a child's playset, is genius. It's so darn clever. I'm again, to think of that within the context of this superhero universe and to be so playful with it is beautiful.
Yeah, and try convincing, you know, the big studios that that's where you're going to set your final climax scene. I bet there was a lot of pressure to have mayhem and you know, have a lot of,
you know, let's take out Manhattan, some crazy stuff like that.
Okay, so let's sum up and score. So, Joe, why don't you go first?
Better than I thought it was going to be, and certainly better than it needed to be, I think. Perhaps because expectations are what they are with this franchise, I think it really did have to be something exceptional to stand out. And they did a fine job. Yeah, this, I wasn't as enamored by Guardians as you guys, but, you know, this is up there among my favorite Marvel movies. I mean, I think surprisingly delightful. So a slightly stingy 8 out of 10, but go out and see this, guys. This is great fun. You really won't regret it.
Yes, Dee.
I think this movie is brilliant, and I think this movie is my idea of how a comic book movie should be, what adaptation should be. I mean, it gives you that sense of thrill that you had as a kid when you were seeing Superman and, you know, comic books, and, you know, it has a giddiness about it, a lightness of touch, which are all things which have been sorely missed, I think, in the superhero universe. I should also say that it's very CGI heavy at certain parts, but it's better for it. That doesn't drag down the movie. And as we've said before, I want to find out who it was who made the casting decision to hire Paul Rudd and shake their hands, because great move. And you know, where most movies are kind of dragging their feet in the last act, this movie gets inspired and it really almost takes off in the last act. And so all around, well done, a very well deserved 8 out of 10 from me as well.
Yeah. Joyful, smart, witty, fun, enjoyable, mesmerizing. This is marvelous. I really, really love this movie. 9 out of 10 from me.
Marvelous. I see what you did there.
Yes. And can Hollywood please stop? You know, Bobby Cannavale, Judy Greer, these are really good actors. I'm sick of Judy Greer playing the mom, you know, of the kid. She was in the Jurassic World, she was doing the same thing.
It was the same role.
And she's such a fine actor.
Even the same wardrobe, I think.
She's great, yeah.
She was so good. I think the last good role she had was in The Descendants. And, you know,
all I can hope is that she gets a very large paycheck for it, because she's underused and underrated.
I keep seeing an ad on TV for a new TV series called Marriage. Okay. And she's one of the main characters in that show, so hopefully her day is coming.
And Michael Pena, I can't wait to see him do funny stuff.
And that
stuff
large
again.
Thomas the Tank Engine, how can you not love a movie with a large Thomas the Tank Engine? It's so cute.
Great fun.
Love this movie.
Okay, we are 20 minutes in, talked all to death about Ant-Man. Let's move to something less rational or irrational.
Yes, let's move on to our pilgrimage of Woody Allen as he comes out with his yearly output. And in 2015, I guess it's Irrational Man. And it's written and directed by Woody Allen. And it stars Joaquin Phoenix as well as Emma Stone. And I believe it tells the story of a philosophy professor who moves into... he's fresh on campus, and he happens to see something occur which drives him to make a sudden change in how his life has been going. And I understand Emma Stone happens to be the quintessential Woody Allen-esque young ingenue student who he happens to fall for, or she happens to fall for him, even while he's having sexy time with a character played by a professor played by Parker Posey. And I believe that's kind of what I know of the movie. I didn't get to see it. I know, Rashmi, you're the biggest fan amongst all of us of Woody Allen movies, and you're the only one who got to see it. So tell us if we should bother.
So this is literally fresh off the press, right? So I just saw this movie yesterday. I haven't even had a chance to like put my thoughts together, but what I can tell you is, this is great. This is more like Match Point.
Really?
Not as great as Blue Jasmine. Midnight and less Paris. Frivolous. Less frivolous. So this is not funny Woody Allen. This is serious Woody Allen. So you know how, recall how he does serious and then there's like the silly, fun, frothy. Light-hearted, this is not frothy at all. This is, I don't think everyone's going to love it. I'm a complete Woody Allen fan, so I find it really difficult to find fault in anything that he does. But normally, you know, I sit back and I see that typeface come up, and I always say this when we watch it, whenever we review a Woody Allen film, I love the pling pling music as it plays and the clarinet. This hasn't got any of that. This is a very jazz heavy soundtrack with incredible acting by Parker Posey, by Emma Stone and Joaquin Phoenix. And I really think that Woody Allen literally sits back and lets them do their thing. And my, do they do their thing. This is incredibly acted. But I think it may be faulted because it's not a deep and heavy plot. But what it does, I think it does very, very well.
It's had mixed reviews. I mean, yeah. I'm looking at Rotten Tomatoes right now. It's running 48%. So the movie seems to be kind of 50-50, those who like it and those who don't. I'm getting the sense that the movie is... I'll read the New York Times comment here. A film that goes dark without going deep. I mean, would you agree with that? Because that seems to be the kind of the common theme of the knocks that I'm seeing here.
Yeah, for me, it's not a case of it goes dark without going deep. I think what it's exploring is two main things. The first thing it's exploring is this weird, you know, we all have those ideas where you overhear something in a coffee shop and you kind of fantasize about that thing that you hear and what if this happened and what if that happened. And really the decision that the main character, Joaquin Phoenix, makes that then changes the course of everything. And then I think it's this, as Woody Allen does so well, it's this exploration of love and life and tortured people and people who are extremely smart. And then I think another theme that comes up in his movies a lot is this infatuation that young women have with older men in some ways. And
I think that plays
out. You should know a little too about that.
Of course, right? And people are going to say it's autobiographical. But I think it's not necessarily a comedy of errors, but like Match Point, the walls start closing in. So you make a decision to do something, and then the walls start closing in. And it's an exploration, which he does impeccably, of people and people's desires and what makes people tick and what makes them love and live and what makes it purposeful to live your life every day. So I think he does that character extremely well. And three amazing performances. I think if this film had come out a couple of months later, we'd be looking at Best Supporting Actress for Parker Posey. I mean, this is incredible.
She's always good. I don't know what she used to do before.
Yeah.
People recognize her, yeah.
I mean, I really, really did know. And we saw her in something fairly recently.
Yeah.
Where she really, really took my breath away.
There was a time, I think in the early 90s, where she was in practically every single independent movie. I mean, she was like the queen of independent cinema. Like, she had 6 or 7 movies one time, you know, all little independent movies. But she's been working for decades now, and, you know, it's good that she gets a meaty role once in a while. Joaquin Phoenix, you know, he's such a fine actor, but he never really resonates for me. There's something very impenetrable about him, so it's a curious choice, I think, to pick him to play, I presume, an avatar of Woody Allen. But you think he's good, right? He's always good.
Amazing. And he's playing a philosophy professor. And he just... these characters are so well realized. And it's actually... I liked Emma Stone in this as well, because she's almost playing someone that's a little bit irritating and who you want to slap, but she does it so well.
I liked her very much in the last Woody Allen movie.
Magic in the Moonlight.
Magic in the Moonlight. She was
lovely. Yeah.
Really lovely and playful there. Is she the same kind of character here?
No.
Did he write this with her in mind kind of thing?
I think
he definitely wrote this with her in mind, and clearly he's her muse of the minute.
Yeah. The hour, yeah.
But this is a very interesting character, and it plays with that whole...
inappropriateness?
Yeah, not necessarily inappropriateness, but it plays with that whole question of desire, which I think he also did in Vicky Cristina Barcelona, where someone presents themselves as very happy in a relationship, and then it just takes one tiny thing that makes that person fantasize about something else. Hmm. So it's always this thing of the grass is always greener. I think he does that notion of the grass is always greener really, really well.
He understands human nature.
He really understands human nature. That's always been
clear. It's a very particular viewpoint, but I think he does get what makes us tick at the heart of it, and I think that's always been the magic with Woody Allen's films. Agree with him or disagree with him,
yeah.
He knows what motivates people.
So I'll sum this up. I thoroughly enjoyed this. This is, it's good to see another serious one come from Woody Allen after Magic in the Moonlight, which was extremely frothy, enjoyable, but frothy. I'm going to give this one an 8 out of 10.
Really?
Yeah, I really enjoyed this. This has got stunning performances.
I am going to caveat that with Rashmi's love of everything Woody Allen. So, I mean, he hasn't made a bad movie for you yet, right?
Correct.
And
I mean, I've liked some less than others.
He's hit or miss for me. I tend to like his more serious work, but I very much enjoyed, you know, Blue Jasmine, Match Point, Magic Midnight in the Moonlight.
Yeah.
And Midnight in Paris didn't work for me, I think, as you remember.
Yeah, Magic in the Moonlight is my favorite. This hasn't got...
Do you mean Magic in Moonlight or Midnight in Paris?
Sorry, Midnight in Paris. Midnight in Paris. Yeah. So this hasn't got the playfulness. This has got no playfulness. There's nothing playful about this movie.
I'm going to love it.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, but it's not as intense as something like Blue Jasmine, because Blue Jasmine was such an intense movie, and Match Point was just breathtaking, right, in terms of a character who gets stuck in a corner. I would say this is halfway between... You know, it's got some elements of Match Point, but it's not frothy and it's not funny, and there's nothing comical about this. The comedy comes from the realness of these characters and the strange decisions and predictable decisions that they make.
Yeah, Woody Allen famously gives absolutely no direction to his actors. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's not one who sits down and explains this is the past history or whatever. He just gives the script, you know, like 2 days before they're going to start shooting. And so I think the movies which are most successful are the ones where the actors themselves invest a lot and kind of bring their own character to it. And I personally think Cate Blanchett just practically stole the movie out of Woody Allen's hands and made it what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very interesting how that whole dynamic works, you know, to his great advantage.
Even though he doesn't give them much in the way of direction, I think he's very clear with them and very terse with them if he thinks they're not doing good work.
Yeah, yeah, he's quick to criticize, yes.
And that's a hard dynamic. I mean,
yeah.
You know, to have a boss who doesn't set expectations and yet tells you
what you're not doing,
when you suck, right, is really, really hard to do. But.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, it's just a matter of his script is so brilliant that the actor can... All they have to do is just say the dialogue, like, you know, like Midnight in Paris or Match Point. The script is so brilliant. You just do your part and get out of the way and, you know, you're part of something wonderful.
I'm telling you, three amazing performances. Joaquin Phoenix, Emma Stone, and Parker Posey.
Okay.
So good.
All right. Well, let's wrap up for today. Let us know what you think of these movies. Let us know what you think of Ant-Man and The Irrational Man as well. Twitter.com/movierollers, Facebook.com/movierollers, mail@movierollers.com. You know how to reach us, so reach us. Until our next episode, too many movies, too little time. A goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.